collapse of the bridge in Minneapolis. 8 people died. Many were injured because of the infrastructure falling apart. So it isn't just a, it's actually a health and safety issue on a large scale. Many other reasons to do it as well. It's time to go. Opinions are those of the speakers. That was from Labor Letters in Politics. You can find it on the website of KPFA. Go to their archives if you want to hear the rest of that. Okay. Hey, Bill. All that methane spewing out of the Arctic.
Just not working anymore. They used to call us working class. And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming live at WEFT.org. And hello, folks. Welcome to the December 17th, 2011 edition of the Illinois World Labor Hour, brought to you over the air on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign. And as I said, webcast worldwide at weft.org. The views and opinions expressed during this hour of programming are those of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of WEFT's management, board of directors, Prairie Air Incorporated. Now here's Tom to acknowledge some of our underwriters.
This hour of programming is being brought to you in part by Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month. For more information or for the unemployed or underemployed helpline, call area code 217, number 469-6111. That's 469-6111. And this hour of programming is being brought to you by you listeners of WEFT and by the Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way. The Brotherhood of the Maintenance of the Way employees are proud to continue their support for the Illinois World Labor Hour, a democratic union, the BMWE, celebrates the voice for labor on WEFT. It is our hope that all workers may share the same benefits that we enjoy, such as living wages, job security, away-from-home expense pay, early retirement, Canadian-style health insurance, and guaranteed year-round work. And the Illinois World Labor Hour is supported in part by you listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. Bob?
Thanks, Tom. I'm your host, Bob Pelesny, here today with co-host Tom Thomas, who will have some workers' interest news for us, and later in the show, the Labor Hour Cultural Corner, and Tom's poem for this week will be one from his book, Cries for Justice, and is entitled, Why Rebels March. Also here with us today is Bill Gorrell, original co-founder of the Illinois World Labor Hour, and he'll be here with some labor news and commentary. And so now here's Tom to kick off this week's edition with some labor news.
Hey, the Social Impact Research Center, which is based in Chicago, is an organization that conducts studies to push for policy changes to help Illinois' poor and unemployed. According to a recent report from the center, high unemployment and poverty continue to linger dangerously in the state 4 years after our current recession began. The state unemployment rate was listed at 10.1% in October, which is twice as high as it was in December of 2007, immediately before our current recession started. At present, some 14% of Illinois' residents are now living at or below the poverty level, compared to 12% before the recession. The center's report suggests that there is a rough road ahead. It estimates that Illinois employers will need to add some 530,000 new jobs to make up for the number of jobs lost during the recession. Since the average debts of Illinois residents actually went up some 37% during the recession, the Social Impact Research Center issued its report arguing for state and federal programs aimed at helping the poor and the unemployed. The report indicates that Illinois' safety net programs just have not grown enough to handle increasing joblessness and poverty in the recession.
Thanks, Tom. Here's a story out of Ohio. Steel workers locked out at a Cooper tire plant in Ohio are raising the alarm as scabs move in to start building tires. The conflict at Cooper's Findlay plant, where 1,050 steel workers build replacement tires for pickups, stems from new machinery the company recently introduced. Tires are mostly hand-built, but the equipment cut a step out of the process. The company asked the union to accept a new rate system and figure out the details over the coming year. United Steelworkers Pat Gallagher said the union could not tell members what they would be earning because the company would not define the new production standards. The steel workers offered an extension to the agreement, but Cooper locked them out November 28th. CEO Roy V. Arms is also a board member of the Manitowoc company in Wisconsin, where workers are on strike over Scott Walker-like union-busting demands. The steel workers are incensed by the lockout because the union gave back $31.2 million in concessions in the last contract, and because the union had helped manufacturers like Cooper by lobbying successfully for a tariff on Chinese tires. The tariff curtailed imports, boosted Cooper's profitability, and allowed it to buy the new equipment, the union says. Cooper, which produces tires in China, did not join the call for the tariff, but now says its expiration next year mandates another round of concessions. The company wants a five-tier wage scheme, no defined benefit pensions for new hires, and no health care coverage for future retirees. Although Cooper made $302.4 million in profit between 2009 and September of 2011. Tom?
Hey, Good Jobs First is a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit group that researches economic development subsidies and where exactly they go. Illinois and many other states got low marks in a report released last Wednesday on ensuring that the tax breaks and other perks handed out to businesses actually do generate good jobs. The Good Jobs First group gave Illinois a D for its efforts. The group rated many Midwestern states with which Illinois competes regularly to attract and retain employers similarly low. Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, and Ohio all received a D+. The report came out just one day after Illinois' lawmakers voted to give hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks to the Sears Holding Corporation and the financial companies of CME Group, Inc. and CBOE Holdings, Inc., after they threatened to leave Illinois and take thousands of jobs with them. The report also criticized Illinois in particular for failing to require that companies receiving incentives intended to create jobs or to keep them in the state provide employees with health care benefits. Bob?
Oh, thanks, Tom. I got a story here. We'll go with the one from Comcast technicians. After a year of fruitless attempts to meet with management, frustrated Comcast technicians at the Fall River and Fairhaven garages in Massachusetts sought an NLRB-supervised election 6 weeks ago. Votes were counted Wednesday, and union supporters fell short. Labor law would have compelled management to finally begin the long-sought-after negotiation if techs won a majority vote. But Comcast management knew too well how to play the union election game. As in most other bids by workers to form unions, it used its near-complete access to employees and its power over their work lives to chip away at their confidence and the strength of their group. Once the union petition was filed on November 4th, management used the intervening 6 weeks to wear the techs down with misinformation about unions and pleas for a second chance to fix problems without a third party. When the vote finally took place on December 14th, the Comcast workers lost their election 42-50. The final count was held at the Comcast office on Warren Street in Fall River. 6 weeks to vote was too long for Comcast workers to wait, said IBEW organizer Steve Smith. He said it reinforces why the National Labor Relations Board should adopt rules to accelerate union representation elections, which it has proposed since June. The time it took to hold the Massachusetts Comcast vote was typical, according to a June study by university researchers Kate Bronfenbrenner and Dorian Warren, which showed that four of every five union elections in 2009 took at least a month. The Comcast workers had been working together for over a year to win union recognition and the right to sit down with management to discuss improving their wages and working conditions. Knowing how successful Comcast management had been across the country at destroying majority support for collective bargaining, the techs in southeastern Massachusetts pursued an alternative route, also sanctioned by the National Labor Relations Act, voluntary recognition from management. The workers signed up about 65% of their co-workers to form a union with IBEW Local 2322, and Congressman Stephen Lynch and Fall River Mayor William Flanagan counted the cards to verify the majority. And we're going to go to a little track here from Workers Independent News out of Wisconsin. Bill, you got something? Oh, okay.
Yeah, my headphones are too loud. There we go. That's a little better.
Webcast on Thursday, the Wisconsin Democratic Party said the people of Wisconsin have already collected nearly enough signatures to recall Governor Scott Walker. Democratic Party of Wisconsin Chair Mike Tate.
In just 30 days, in less than half the time granted, you have done something truly amazing. Your strength and determination has helped us collect more than 507,000 signatures to recall Scott Walker. And we are well on our way to beating our internal goal of collecting more than 720,000.
A total of 240,208 signatures are needed to recall Walker. United Wisconsin says its goal is to collect at least 720,277 signatures to make sure there are more than enough to trigger that recall election. Walker is targeted for recall for his attack on public worker collective bargaining, but a long list of other issues is also fueling this recall effort. Four Republican state senators are also targeted for recall. As recall activists near the number of signatures needed to recall Walker, potential legal trouble is also brewing for Wisconsin's unpopular governor. Andrew Jensen, a Milwaukee-area real estate broker and Walker campaign contributor, has been arrested as part of an FBI and grand jury probe of Walker aides. The FBI is investigating whether Walker aides illegally used Milwaukee County resources for partisan political purposes while Walker was Milwaukee County executive. In September, the FBI raided the home of longtime Walker aide Cynthia Archer. Nearly a dozen people have gotten immunity in return for testimony in the grand jury John Doe investigation. Some basic labor protections could be extended soon, Jesse Russell reports.
Home care workers could soon have the same minimum wage and overtime protections as most occupations. The Obama administration announced on Thursday that it planned to propose regulations that would put those workers, currently classified in the same category as babysitters, under the Fair Labor Standards Act. In a statement, the president said, "They work hard and play by the rules, and they should see that work and responsibility rewarded." For nearly 40 years, home care workers have been under the companionship label, which is exempt from the Fair Labor Standards Act.
Cooper Tire workers in Findlay, Ohio, have been locked out since November 28th. In 2008, the workers gave $31 million in pay and benefit concessions to help keep the company afloat. Now the tire company is turning a profit and workers are hoping to recover some of those concessions. The company has announced it plans to open a new plant in Serbia next year. This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
And I think we're going to go to a little bit from Hightower. And I believe that this is about big corporations with a little heart. So I think it's about Walmart, one of our friends here.
How small can a giant corporation get? I don't mean in size, but in spirit. Once again, America's biggest commercial empire, Walmart, is displaying its incredibly shriveled ethical center by whacking the already meager healthcare benefits that hundreds of thousands of workers count on. Just a couple of years ago, this $400 billion a year retailing colossus tried to hush critics of its Dickensian labor policies by ballyhooing a bare-bones healthcare plan for its associates. The insurance scheme had such high deductibles, however, that barely half of its employees bought into it. Now, even that benefit is being yanked from the 40% of Walmart's employees who are part-time workers. Also, insurance premiums and deductibles are being dramatically jacked up for thousands of full-time workers. For example, one full-timer, who's paid only $12,000 a year, will see her premium more than double to about $3,300 a year, a fourth of her income. "I won't be able to afford the insurance," she says, "and I really can't go without insurance because I have a heart problem." Top executives and the board of directors of this enormously profitable corporation also have a heart problem. They are taking advantage of America's raging unemployment crisis to stiff their workforce, since these low-wage, non-union employees desperately need the jobs and have no power to stand up to the corporation's greed. A Walmart PR flack says that decisions to whack the workers, quote, "were not easy, but they strike a balance between managing costs and providing quality care and coverage." This is Jim Hightower saying, care and coverage for whom? For the top executives, of course. They get full health care coverage from the corporation. How's that for boosting morale? And for morality? For more information, go to farrespect.org/healthcare.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at HightowerLowdown.org.
And we're back. You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM and streaming at WEFT.org. And I think we're going to go to a song here. This is by Aloe Black, and the song is I Need a Dollar. And then we'll be back with Tom's poem. And at about 11:30 here, we're going to have a call-in guest, Steve Zeltzer from the West Coast. He'll be talking about the port shutdown on Monday and the Occupy movement and various political implications out there in the unions and things like that. So anyway, here's Aloe Black with I Need a Dollar. Come to that part of the program. Time for Tom's poem of the week. And this week's poem, as I said, is from Tom's book, Cries for Justice, and is entitled Why Rebels March.
There is an Arapaho proverb that's followed piously by some. Unto each who dares to wander, the gift of knowledge soon will come. It's that which we each need to learn, even if it must be self-taught. Wondering leads to questioning by we who for the truth have sought. They call us rebels when we march, just as they have through history. We call the tyrants what they are. Their treachery is no mystery. Marching together in the streets, we'll let what we wonder be known, as we stand strong for what we seek until the truth we all are shown. To wonder what to wonder of is quite an easy thing to do. Yet with the countless lies they tell, to seek the truth is up to you. You people of America who think that you are truly free, had best start paying attention, or free we will no longer be. Speak aloud of what you wonder. Demand the answers we deserve. Don't let us all be victims of those who were elected to serve. Demand we see some answers to joblessness and illegal war. Tell the fascists we're sick of both and don't want either anymore. Why Rebels March was written at the Poets Loft in Champaign, Illinois on February 24th, 2010 and was brought to you live today, December 17th, 2011, here on the Illinois World Labor Hour on WEFT 90.1 FM in Champaign, community radio for East Central Illinois.
Thanks, Tom. And our usual weekly reminder that you can catch one of the co-hosts of the Illinois World Labor Hour, David Johnson, and his co-host, Jim Iman, on their TV program, Labor's View. That program's on Sunday.
It's 4 to 5, I believe.
4 to 5 on Comcast Cable Channel 6, or Band of Public Television. And they always have an interesting program there, sometimes some film and video of different things that's going on. That's every Sunday.
It's Comcast, an educational program.
Yeah, Comcast Cable Channel 6. David Johnson and Jim Iman with Labor's View TV. And I did want to make another announcement about a program coming up on Monday right here on WEFT 90.1 FM on the Champaign-Urbana Radio Theater. They're going to have a gentleman who's born in Urbana. He's a dramatist, Rodney George Peacock. He's traveled the world and now has returned to his birthplace, attempting to prove that you can go home again. And you can join us this Monday, December 19th at 6 p.m. as Peacock discusses his life and artistic philosophy. And that'll be followed by part one of his mythic drama trilogy, Noontide, that's going on at 7 p.m. on Monday right here on WEFT. And I think the profile is going to continue on December 26th at 7 p.m. with discussion and excerpts from part two of the trilogy. And that's Rodney George Peacock. 6 p.m. right here on WEFT, Monday, December 19th, and his part one of his trilogy, Noontide, at 7 p.m., and then following up again the following Monday at 7 p.m., Rodney George Peacock.
Hey, won't Neil Parthen be on at 2 o'clock on WRFU?
Radio Free Urbana, yeah.
Doing Low Not Power. Just Another Sports Show.
Yeah, he Talk. Should be.
All right.
What's the call letters for that?
WRFU.
Low Power FM in Urbana.
Is that 104.5?
I believe that's right, yeah.
And I think he's also has podcasts of his earlier shows.
So, oh, does he?
Yeah, maybe you can find out more about that at the WRFU website.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think they stream, but...
Well, yeah, they haven't been streaming anyway. Yeah. But we're streaming right now.
We are streaming. And speaking of podcasts, I did get last week's show up on radioforall.net, and that was part of our post-meeting last week. I'll make a recommitment to getting our weekly radio programs put back up at Radio for All. You can find us under the series name Illinois World Labor Hour. Yeah, Bill says there's a bunch of old ones that you and Peter Miller did and stuff up there, too.
Yeah, and they might be some. The earliest ones would be under the Eastern Illinois Labor Journal. Hey, that sounds like Steve Seltzer calling from San Francisco.
Sounds like our phone caller calling in, so let's get him on the air here.
I'm just promoting.
Hello, Steve?
Yes, this is Steve Seltzer.
Steve Zeltzer, you're on WEFT 90.1 FM here in Champaign, and welcome to the show.
Steve, well, thank you for having me.
Steve is a rank-and-file labor activist and a labor media producer from San Francisco. And, Steve, we got you on to talk a little bit about the recent port shutdown out there, the Occupy movement, and the politics involved with the Alameda Labor Council. And why don't you pick up that story there, or you can tell us a little bit about yourself first, Steve.
Okay, well, I produce labor programming, labor video. I'm a labor videographer, laborvideo.org. And I've been doing cable programming and community programming. Also, I have a unpaid staff at KPFA Radio, part of Pacifica, Workweek Radio. So we're working on developing a Workweek labor show, an international labor radio and TV channel. So in addition to that, I'm also active in the Transport Workers Solidarity Committee, transportworkers.org, which links up transport workers all over the world with publicity chairman, also United Public Workers for Action, upwa.info. So I've been working with rank and file members of the ILWU and other trade unions and the Occupy movement to support their organization and their efforts. So the Occupy movement at a rally, Occupy Oakland, that was held in conjunction with meeting Dan Kaufman of the president of the Longview local, Washington, which is under attack, called for a West Coast port shutdown for this, December the 12th.
This Longview is the one that's being run by EGT?
Longview is run by EGT, and basically it's they're trying to break the coastwide contract that the ILWU has by bringing in a non-ILWU port so they can undercut other ports. And EGT has said they want to be the Walmart of grain elevator shippers. So they want to have a Walmart operation and basically have complete control of labor and weaken any kind of power of the union, of the maritime unions.
This is where they're bringing in the operators union to try to break the ILWUs?
That's correct. They brought in the IUOE 701 to take the jobs. The union, the plant was built non-union. They imported Guatemalan workers, and the union, the building trades union, did not picket or have any action. But then when the operator, EGT, found out that they weren't going to be able to operate the plant, then they brought in a contractor who employed 701 IUOE operators. Now, this is not a new thing for the operating engineers. I used to be a member of the operating engineers. They believe in getting work wherever, even if it means crossing picket lines. In Redwood City, they actually, in California, were unloading scab cargo of IBU boatmen, inland boatmen's union, who were on strike. And they were starting to unload scab cargo, and the longshoremen had a mass shutdown of the port and kicked them out of there. But unfortunately, their business unionists and the leadership of the union doesn't care whether they bust other unions or whatever in general. Not their exceptions, and they're good mills and locals, the operating engineers. But in many instances, you have a bureaucratic, corrupt leadership of the IUOE, and we make hundreds of thousands of dollars and really are able to sell themselves to anybody, including the union bus employers. So in any event, the Washington State AFL-CIO and the Oregon State AFL-CIO are both condemned with union busting act by Operating Engineer 701, and Richard Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, overruled it and said, well, you have to go through the bureaucracy of the AFL-CIO to get an action. So basically, the AFL-CIO is allowing union busting by one of their member locals against another union. Hmm. In any event, the Occupy movement in Oakland decided to call this West Coast action and support throughout the western ports of the United States to close the Wall Street of the ports, Wall Street of Maritime, where big companies like SST and other companies are shipping out. And work leaflet education began to come forward, and rank and file longshoremen were supporting this, not in the name of the union, but as rank and file members. And what happened was is that the international ILWU, Bob McElrath and his shill, Craig Mirrolees, who's the spokesperson for the ILWU, said that this was this was the third party group, basically. This was, didn't represent workers, and you had the first party was the company, the second party was the union, and the third party was the Occupy movement. And the Occupy movement should not tell the ILWU what to do.
Hmm.
Well, the ILWU and local 10 in San Francisco have a long history of solidarity with against apartheid. They boycotted a ship having steel from South Africa.
Right.
They had a West Coast shutdown against the war in Iraq in 2008.
Right.
They had a shutdown, a protest against the murder of Oscar Grant in Oakland by the police.
Oh, yeah.
So they have a long history of solidarity, not crossing picket lines. And basically, in my view, what the ILWU leadership is trying to do is set up a situation where the Occupy movement was the enemy and that the police and the government were good people for trying to keep the courts open. And on top of that, the Port of Oakland spent tens of thousands of dollars for ads in the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, Oakland Tribune, with calling for the ports to stay open and for people to sign up with, in an email list to keep the ports open. This would hurt the people of Oakland.
The Port of Oakland.
Port for jobs.
The Port of Oakland took out ads in the New York Times.
What were you saying?
I was asking you. You said the Port of Oakland took out ads in the New York Times.
Yes.
Interesting.
So they were spending big money to oppose this thing, and the other thing that happened is some union officials at the Alameda Labor Council introduced a resolution to oppose the Occupy Oakland and basically attack them, line up attacking them. So the person that introduced the resolution, his name is Victor Uno, and he's also president of Secretary-Treasurer of IBEW 595 in Oakland. And so he introduced this motion, but he didn't let the delegates know that he also sits on the Board of Oakland, the Port of Oakland Board of Directors.
Hmm.
So he introduced this resolution, and prior to the meeting, a member of AFSCME 444, the East Bay Mud workers, utility workers, had come to the meeting. He's a liaison between his union and Occupy to try to give a report to the council about why Occupy Oakland was taking this position and where they were at. So he wanted to have a discussion, at least an opportunity to speak to the meeting. And Josie Camacho refused to allow him to speak. He actually begged, he said, please let me speak. She refused to allow him to speak to the council.
Hmm.
And it turns out that her husband is Victor Uno, who's on the board.
Interesting.
So, yeah, nepotism, I would say, dishonesty, lack of transparency by the union officials. So he introduced this resolution, and a lot of rank-and-file delegates came there, and the teachers' unions, even the Oakland Education Association and officials, who opposed it, said it would be a disaster. One delegate, Charles Smith, is with United Public Workers for Action. He's a delegate from his local, AFSCME 444, said that the Occupy movement has done more to revitalize the labor movement than Alameda Labor Council has ever done.
Yeah.
And furthermore, he attacked them for in the meeting, they said that one of the reasons they were attacking the Occupy movement, they said Occupy Oakland has never come to us and said they wanted to discuss with us. There's no communication.
That's what they said when the representative had been there before the meeting started and pleading to talk to the meeting.
Exactly.
Hmm.
So other delegates brought that up and said, how could you say that when we had a delegate here or we had a representative of the Occupy movement and the trade union members on the executive board of AFSCME 444 actually come here and ask to speak before the delegates and give a presentation on what Occupy Oakland was doing.
Right.
So this was completely duplicative, and the majority of delegates at the Alameda Labor Council saw through this maneuver, and they spoke out strongly against this attack on Occupy, and as a result of which, the president of the ILWU Local 10, who had gone along with the resolution, made a motion to table it. And at that point, Jose Camacho, in her position as chair of the, or the secretary, executive director of the Alameda Labor Council, attacked out. So she was attacking the LW for actually making a motion to table the motion. But it passed by a large majority to table the motion, so it failed.
Well, good.
So, but it shows the pernicious role of this union bureaucracy, who, instead of welcoming Occupy movement, basically tried to attack it and say that the movement is a problem with the Occupy movement.
Right.
So, and it shows also the role of the union officials who have these positions, these agencies in California, and are, who are they operating for? Are they operating for the labor movement? Are they working for these boards of directors, which are basically big business operations? They don't charge rent at the Port of Oakland, two big shipping lines. And at the same time, the schools in Oakland are falling apart. They're privatizing them through charter schools. No money is coming from the Port of Oakland. It did provide $500,000 to Jerry Brown when he was mayor for a military charter in Oakland. They gave him $500,000, but they won't provide money for the schools and for workers in Oakland, public service.
Right.
And so you have this contradiction.
Right. As you point out, Victor Uno is a member of the Port of Oakland, commissioner or something?
Yes, he's a commissioner on Port of Oakland. And he, when he made his motion, he did not identify himself as such. He didn't say, I'm also a member of the Port of Oakland. So he was dishonest in presenting himself before the delegates. And a lot of delegates found out afterwards that, in fact, not only was he executive director of IBW 595, but he was also a member of the Port of Oakland, which had been putting out ads attacking him and opposing the action by Occupy Oakland. So, in any event, there was a lot of pressure of the media to attack this, to say the unions were against this, and, you know, that this was bad for the working people of Oakland, and going to hurt jobs. And, despite that kind of corporate political propaganda campaign, thousands of people came out, 800, maybe 1,500 in the morning, marched to the port and picketed the entrances. The police were under orders to actually not attack the demonstration, to allow people to picket. So they had a presence there, and they marched into one of the ports that I was at, where I was covering it, and then they did not create a competition. I think what they were worried about is if they physically attacked the protesters, the picketers, then there would have been a war on the dock.
Sure.
Thousands, tens of thousands, because basically behind the movement, capitals and corporate America and the role of the government in supporting corporations, not working people.
Now, they did shut down the Port of Oakland. Did they shut that down for 24 hours?
The Port of Oakland was shut down all day.
All day.
Day and evening shift, it was shut down. In fact, they were picketing until 3 a.m. the following morning.
Right. As well,
it was a full closure. Now, other ports along the West Coast had varying action. Los Angeles, there was a picket in San Diego. I understand there was a rally of 10,000 people in Longview.
Longview, also... Right.
I mean, so, and Longview is a very small town, but a lot of people are coming there. And there's going to be a caravan to Longview, a West Coast caravan, when the ship comes in, cargo, probably early.
Okay.
But
yeah, I think we're losing you. I think your cell phone's kind of breaking
maybe
up there.
Maybe you can move closer to a window or
maybe it's better.
Yeah, that's a little bit better.
There's going to be a mass rally and probably another West Coast shutdown on when the ship comes in at Longview. So this is a growing movement. And one of the things that your listeners should understand is that this Occupy movement is not just about unorganized workers. Although majority of workers in this country are not in unions. In fact, many of the Occupy are workers, but not in unions. They don't have these. They're prevented from having unions by firing workers who want unions. But this Occupy movement has the potential of helping to organize millions of workers. Because if workers get united, have general assemblies, mass workers, rallies, and marches, we and working people in this country can move towards general strike actions. And right. This is one of the things I believe. We need a national general strike to shut the country down, shut all the airports down, force the government to get out of Iraq, all these 800 bases around the world. We need to use the power of the working class, the mass of working people, to close everything down and then say to the capitalists and the government, look, things are changing. We've got to withdraw the troops. We've got to stop attacking workers. We've got to fund public services. We've got to put people to work. And working people have to have general assemblies in their workplace. Workers from all the unions come together and discuss the debate. And I think this is what these officials are afraid of, that this Occupy movement, which is a democratic movement, will spread to the entire working class and organized workers. Because the unionized structure in this country is a corporate-type structure, right. Top-down, centralized. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with workers' democracy, and actually was set in place during the 50s with the merger of the AFL-CIO and the witch hunt during the 50s, 40s and 50s, where they wanted a corporate-type business union system in the United States against the CIO, against militant socialist leftists in the union.
Excellent. Yeah, Bill Gurrell, one of the co-hosts of this show, frequently talks about the corporate structure of his union here, the laborers' union locally.
Oh, yeah, LIUNA, you know, another example of that. They merge these locals. Local members have less and less control. McCarran and the Carpenters, who I'm sure Dave could talk about. I mean, they have a corporate structure. It's business unionism. And they certainly don't want to mobilize unemployed workers. I mean, there are millions of unemployed unionized workers, and there are no mass protests. In fact, during the time in the United States when millions of people have lost their homes, millions of people have been dispossessed, millions of people are unemployed, what mass protests have the unions organized? They had a protest in Washington last October, but it was basically pointed towards getting more politicians elected, getting Obama reelected. You know, the strategy of the union bureaucracy in this country is that Obama and the Democrats will get elected. We have, if we get them elected, they'll solve our problem.
Yeah,
Steve. Sorry, this is Bill. And let me see. What was that? I think back in 2009, I created a Facebook page that's pretty well dead now called, Hey, AFL-CIO, organize a million unemployed worker march on Washington.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I just, and I would, I friended, Trumka, you know, and every time he'd kind of pop up on my, you know, I'd bring that up and try and bug whoever is doing Richard Trumka on Facebook.
Sure.
You know, it's just like you can't get anywhere. And, you know, and about the laborers themselves, I tell you what, I just don't have 20 years right now to spend trying to get them straightened out. I'm really hoping they just fall on their own.
Well, you know, the laborers in San Francisco, they merged the Hog Carriers local because it was a militant local.
Oh, I read about that, yeah.
Yeah, they also are supporting privatization of the parks to protect their jobs. They set up an apprentice rate, and they're supporting privatization to protect their jobs. So basically, sell out the rest of the working class if they can keep some position. But they accept the corporate structure. They accept the billionaires telling them what the best way is to run things. And San Francisco has got 16 billionaires. There's no problem with money, but you've got to go after the billionaires. And this country is a wealthy country. You've got 88 billionaires in California. You've got billionaires all over, and they say we're broke. We don't have any money. You know, this is a lie that they're propagandizing to the American people. There's lots of wealth in this country, but it's held by the 1%. And the only way we're going to get the wealth back is by collective mass action of the working class. And the Occupy movement is a populist, anti-capitalist movement that says we have to change the inequality and we have to have justice for human beings, for people. I mean, you know, you have got children who don't have homes in this country. You've got homeless children in this country. They're trying to get schools. They're laying off school teachers. They're attacking public workers. They're attacking pensions. You know, all the basic services that have been built up over the last 40, 50 years are under attack. And what is Trump doing? There have been no mass protests. In fact, I remember during the fight against NAFTA, they refused to call a mass protest against NAFTA. They could have gotten organized and unorganized workers together who were against NAFTA. They didn't want to fight Clinton. They didn't want to fight the Democrats, and that's a major political obstacle to defend workers, this relationship between the unions and the Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's almost worse to get a Democrat elected because nothing's going to happen. And that goes with many other groups, so-called progressive groups. The environmental movement is really bad on this.
Right.
I mean, with what happened at Durban last week, they should be all over Obama.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They should be all over Obama. But they don't want to say a word. You know, these the Democrats and the union officials are like, they like Trump does, continually says he trusts Obama to do the right thing. He has faith in Obama. First of all, this idea that it's a problem of the politicians and not the system. If you have a good politician, you can solve your problems is actually, you know, not accurate. This is a system problem. It's capitalism. It's not going to be solved by better politicians. And the other thing is the ideology that, that somehow politicians will save us. The working class itself doesn't have to mobilize and self-organize, but some politician's going to save us. That's the ideology of the capitalism and the electoral system.
Well, I mean, and that also works with the unions, too. It's like, well, you don't do anything on your job, don't wildcat or anything, because we're going to take care of you.
That's right. That's right. It's basically a business union, and it's the union is a service organization. Somebody else will do it for you. And they don't want workers having power where they are and using their power because that's a threat to their control.
Yeah, well, and it's something that I'm not real happy about this week is the Democrats giving up or possibly giving up on the XL pipeline over this payroll tax cut.
The one from Canada to Mexico?
Canada to, I believe, the Gulf Coast of the United States.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's, I don't know, it's been a big thing lately. And that was something where a lot of environmentalists did really go to bat getting arrested last month over.
Sure, absolutely.
And the Democrats are ready to sell them out over this payroll taxing, which I think is a bad idea anyway. I think it sets up Social Security for more danger of being totally screwed up because someday, even though it's supposedly to be paid back out of the general funds, one of these days that payback time is going to come, and that first thing you're going to hear is, oh, well, we can't afford that, so maybe we need to change. But I brought my paycheck stub in. I got a paycheck stub here for 1 day's work, 8 hours, all right? And out of that 8 hours, when you add Medicare and the Social Security tax together, it cost me $12.33.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, they're endangering the environment, endangering the entire world, and endangering Social Security over $12.33 a day for me.
Yeah.
Well, I think Obama has shown that he really doesn't care about fighting these billionaires. I mean, he's willing to accept their agenda.
Yeah.
You know, the one of the things about confrontation politics is that, you know, the unions, instead of saying, let's negotiate with the Democrats, they say they want to shut things down, or with the Republicans, they want to shut things down. Well, let's shut everything down in this country, and then we'll negotiate. And actually, that's what we need to do. But the Democrats are not going to do that because they support the basic framework of capitalism, which requires attacking working people in this country. This is business. They want to privatize Social Security, and this ending the payroll tax is helping to privatize Social Security because it's underfunding Social Security.
Exactly.
I mean, it's an outrage that they're going along with that, but they refuse to pass the tax on the billionaires.
Right.
And this is their agenda. I mean, this is Obama's and the Democrats' solution to the economic crisis. Let's cut the taxes that help defend our Social Security system.
Well, I tell you what, the way that both of these parties have been working in this country over the last, going back at least to Reagan, and I don't, you know, people got to realize that all that stuff that they gripe about Reagan was passed by a Democratic Congress. He signed the bills, you know.
Right.
He's the Democratic Congress are the people that made it so that my unemployment is taxed.
That's right. Well, they needed Clinton to pass NAFTA. They needed Obama to pass CORUS, these reactionary free trade agreements. They needed a Democrat to pass that. And that's why the big bankers and the industrialists in this country like Obama. That's why they're giving him money.
Yeah, that's
hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, they wouldn't give him money if he was actually challenging them.
Right.
Yeah,
he wants their money to get reelected.
Yeah, and he's he's the Nixon going to China.
Yeah,
you know, he can go to those places where a Republican can't. And
well, he also, you know, I mean, they also blame the Chinese. Well, it's U.S. multinationals that go to China to make the profit, and that's what capitalism is. It's not good, bad, ugly. It's business. You go where you make the most profit. But what they're telling the American people is you have no future. You're unprofitable. It's more profitable to go to China and India, and basically you're screwed. You have no future. Your young people can't afford to go to school. They're not going to get jobs, decent jobs. And when you say that to people over and over again, and that's what they're doing to people in this country, people begin to ask, well, why support the system if I have no future in it? That's what they're saying to people.
Yeah. Well, that's what, say, the Sex Pistols asked about England back in the late 70s and early 80s. Not just the Sex Pistols, but many people in the punk movement. That was sort of one of their themes, that they had no future.
Yeah.
Well, we have to, the way we're going to change the system, the dynamic, is build a movement like Occupy is doing, a democratic movement of all working people, all unions coming together and taking collective action. That's how you're going to change. And there are going to be general strikes in this country. They're pushing people to the wall. They have no choice. And the trade union bureaucracy in this country wants it both ways. They say they want to support working people, but in reality, they're supporting with the concessions. Their concession bargaining, we got to share the pain. The ideology of sharing the pain of this union bureaucracy. They haven't cut their salaries. Trump hasn't cut his salary, but they want working people to cut their salaries.
Yeah.
They're not taking hits on their pension benefits and conditions, but they want workers to take concessions. So this is kind of
what's happening? The matter of the police attacking? Or?
Once again, we're talking with Steve Zeltzer.
Okay, they just went by.
And,
well, they're trying to get me out.
Once again, we're talking to Steve Zeltzer here on WEFT. And, Steve, we got just a minute or two left. Closing thoughts?
Well, I just want to say I'm optimistic. With some people, I think, are beginning to stand up and organize. And, I think that the Occupy movement, the use of technology, the Internet, we're going to organize a national conference of workers on March 31st in San Francisco with United Public Workers for Action and other trade unions to build a workers' movement that can have a Democratic Labor Party. That can begin to really represent working people. And I think we have no choice but to organize and use our power and strength. And when working people wake up, we can't stop it. That's, again, one of the things I think that's happening in this country right now.
Yeah, but it's been pretty hard to wake them up.
Yes.
Do you have any websites or anything like that you'd like to announce?
Well, you go to transportworkers.org. Transportworkers.org. That has lots of stuff on transportation workers and the ILWU, Longshoremen, the Fight for Democracy, that's one. United Public Workers for Action, UPWA.info. United Public Workers for Action, UPWA.info. There are 1.5 million public workers in California. There are millions nationally. We have to unite all public workers to take collective action.
There you go.
That's what we're working towards. We have the power.
Sounds good, Steve. Thanks.
Very good. Well, good talking to you. I'm glad you had me on.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
We appreciate
care.
It.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Hey, Bob, is there a show immediately following this one today?
Yes. Occupy the Airwaves.
That's gentleman. Occupy the Airwaves. New program. Coming
right.
to you guys. All right.
Yeah.
They did pretty well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not sure how long they'll be on. Noon to one, at least. And I think they've been filling in.
They've been going till 2.
From 1 to 2. So stay tuned for that. They had... had a movie at the Champaign Public Library the other day. Paul Mute was talking about it. And, boy, I wish I could remember the name. I went to see it.
Oh, Inside Job.
Inside Job.
Yeah.